Parshas Truma. As one of the Rabbonim said, we're now going into what he calls the technical aspects of the Chumash. Truma, Tetzava, a fair bit of Kisisa, Vayakel Pikudei. A lot of technical details about the Mishkan. And then we get into Vayikra, the technical details of Korbanos. We go to Tazria Metzora, and a lot of detail. And he says for a lot of people, it's like an 8 week or so sleepy period when they'd rather not try to grapple with these matters. Parshas Truma, just to look at an outline, deals with the Mishkan. And in specifics, we're given, firstly, a list of all the raw materials that were needed for the Mishkan. Gold, silver, copper, wool dyed sky blue, dark red and crimson linen, goat's wool, ram skins, acacia wood, oil, spices, incense, precious stones. And then we deal with the Aron and the specifics of the way the Aron is to be constructed. We're told that the outer level layer of the Aron is made out of gold, its cover is made out of gold, and the Keruvim, the angel-like, childlike figures on top. And it says that the weight of the cover alone, without the Keruvim, is somewhere between 150 and 2,500 pounds of pure gold. We're told that the Aron is three parts, a gold outer, an inner wood, and inside that, an inner gold. We're then told about the Shulchan, the table on which the 12 lechem panim, quote, the face breads stayed all week, and the showbread, as they call it. We move to the menorah and all its utensils, its requirement to have knobs and almonds and whatever else. It says the weight of the menorah was about 3,000 shekel or 150 pounds of pure gold. We're then told about the structure of the actual Mishkan, the way the perimeter was made. Beams, decorative metals, leather coverings. The peroches, which is a dividing line between the Kodshei Kodshim, the Holy of Holies, where the Ark was, and the next area, which encompassed the Shulchan, the menorah, and the inner altar. And then we're told about the ramped copper Mizbeach outdoors. And we get a talk, we get discussion about the outer enclosure surrounding the entire Mishkan. And this is what our Parsha deals with, a lot of technical detail. There, I remember when I was in grade 5, we had this pamphlet called HaMishkan V'Kelav, the Mishkan and its specific items, and that was, it gave us a pictorial idea of what we had. Today, there are much better periodicals and I would say little books and pamphlets that describe the Mikdash in its proper way, the way it is, and we get an idea of what it was. Everybody takes note of the first pasuk, Vayidaber Hashem o Moshe Leimor. Hashem said to Moshe, V'yikhu li truma yeis kol ish asher yidvena libi tikhu es trumasi. And as the stone chumash says, speak to Bnei Yisrael and let them take for me a portion from every man whose heart motivates him. You shall take my portion. And everybody asks, what's this v'yikhu take for me? It should mean, in every appeal, we asked, give. This was the first general appeal made, the first building appeal in the history. And what's this wording? Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky points out that we finished last week with Mishpatim, tremendous detail about the halachos, the rules between Adam l'chaveiro, a man and his fellow man. And now, all of a sudden, we get a juxtaposition of the Mishkan. Right? Hashem tells Klal Yisrael, I want you to build me a mikdash in which, quote, I will figuratively dwell. My Shechina will be there. And as he says again, the Torah now gives us the mainstay of Jewish existence, the appeal. He says the Torah goes on to tell us we need gold, silver, an array of other materials, in order to build and to furnish the Mishkan. And again, he points out the special word, take, right? And he says, what's the message? He says, it seems to be a semantic anomaly. There's a reason this word was used, take and not give. And he gives a little story. He says, Max and Irving went out boating. They're going to go fishing. And the day became overcast. But they weren't worried. Unfortunately, a very fierce storm came in. And their rowboat was tossed, right, like a piece of paper in the wind. To and fro, back and forth, etc. And finally, they were overturned. Max was a strong swimmer and said to Irving, right? He said, please come, take my hand. Irving didn't respond. He said, give me your hand. And he didn't listen, and unfortunately, Irving drowned. When they came to shore, and he was totally exhausted, and the paramedics came, Irving's wife was there, and she said, Max, what happened? And he said, I felt I could save us both, and I kept yelling at Irving, give me your hand, right? And he didn't respond, and she said, what did you do to my Irving, she said. You idiot, you said the wrong thing. You should have said, take my hand. Irving never gave anything to anybody as long as he walked on this earth. Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky says, oftentimes people make the same mistake that Irving made. When we hear somebody ask us to give, we recoil. The Torah is teaching us in the very first collection that when you give with a true heart, you're not really giving away anything. You're taking something for yourself. Materialistic pleasures, items, etc., have a finite life cycle, right? New cars become old. The greatest of homes deteriorate over time because that's what happens to creations and they need work. The greatest gizmos of yesteryear aren't gone. We don't have a Commodore 24 anymore. Right? And what remains? Only things that have an ability to be everlasting. The things we actually gave are what we take. We take everlasting reward. We take the schar that we God gives us, both in this world and in the world to come. They remain in what he says is the oitzer, the storehouse of schus, of merits. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu continues to repay us and our descendants. He says, when we think about the Montefiores and we think about the Rothschilds, he says, many people will say they had money, but that's not what they really left. What did they leave? They left a legacy in Jewish survival. They are really remembered, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers them for their great benevolence and charity. They didn't only buy for the here and now, they invested in eternity. And therefore, they also received eternity. And he says that's the lesson of the phrase HaKadosh Baruch Hu used. And my friend points out the order in which the Torah describes the raw materials needed for the Mishkan. Gold, silver, copper, and then we go down, wood, oil, spices, etc., goat skins, etc. And then at the end, Avnei Shohem, the Avnei Miluim, the special stones used in the ephod of the Kohen Gadol's breastplate. And the Or HaChaim HaKodesh says, the Avnei Shohem and the Avnei Miluim seem to be out of order. If we're going to try to do an ordering of events from most precious to less valuable, they should be somewhere, probably after the gold and silver. And he says, Yor HaChaim gives three different comments on this ordering. It says, in Vayakel we learn that the special stones were brought by the Nisim, the princes. And it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was upset with them initially. Because, it says, while they had great motives, right, what they said is, we're going to wait until the end. We're going to give everybody else an opportunity to give, and any shortfall, whatever, we will cover. In other words, we are guaranteeing that the $12 million needed for the appeal will be met. Whatever the shortfall is, it's ours. But Chazal tell us their calculations were wrong. They should have realized that this was the first time one could ever give anything to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The first time you could dedicate something, taking materiality and turning it into holiness. And he said they should have realized There was no way there was ever going to be a deficiency. The Jewish people collectively would never allow this campaign to fail. And because they waited to the end, they found out there was more collecting that was needed. So therefore, they said, oh, we blew it. What's missing? These stones. And they gave them then. They were the very last things donated, and so they're put at that spot to indicate that the Nisim had made an error. He said he heard a comment from, he says, a good friend of mine. He says, Dr. Marcel Reicher. He said, when the Nisim underestimated the generosity and the level of dedication, they should have always expected a generous, highly generous response. Who gave them the right to make an assumption that the rest of Klal Yisroel would allow a deficit to occur? And therefore, they gave something, but that was given to something that wasn't part of the original Mishkan. In other words, the Big Day Kahuna, the clothing, were another part. They missed out in basically giving to the building campaign. They got to give to the accoutrement, right? To the extra campaign. And he said, for that reason, they're listed last, again, to stress this failure. He says, the Or HaChaim quotes the Gemara that the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Meluim were brought to the princes on clouds from Gan Eden. In other words, for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent these stones from Shemayim to them. And therefore, there was no human involvement, no human hewing of stones, chiselings of stones, etc. There was no toil involved in attaining these stones. When you look to the oils, to the spices, and to the curtains, etc., there was human involvement in there. Presumably, the metals had to be plated in some way. The gold had to be melted down. The silver had to be melted down. The copper also. There was human involvement, right? There was not just materiality. There was, as we say, labor. And we always used to say that to make something, you needed inventory raw materials, you needed labor, and there had to be overhead. You had to have the place to do it, the power, you know, the electricity, etc. Their gift was something that was totally gratis. And my friend says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never looks at the amount of the check someone gives. What's more important is, what was the human cost of that check? He says, the person who's struggling check of $18 may be much more valuable than the $500,000 check given by the guy with two yachts and three skyscrapers. And he said, that's the reason why the Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Shoham are last. Because it didn't take a lot to give it. You got it for free, you gave it for free. And I think we could all say that it's an interesting perspective, but we know there are many people that when they get something for free, the last thing they're going to do is share it, either with man or God. And Rabbi Frantz says, I was doing some studying about historical campaigns. I was looking, right, what were the building campaigns done in history? And he said, he came through an article from a paper in Vilna called Dem Wort. There was a reporter describing the dedication of a new building in the yeshiva in Kletz. Rav Aaron Kotler, right, was the Rosh Yeshiva in Kletz. He probably was the last one before, right, was destroyed by the Nazis. He says this was earlier. This was a major event. It said Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer came from Eretz Yisroel. Rav Elchanan Wasserman was there. Rav Shimon Shkup. All the leading Torah personalities. You had the greatest Torah luminaries in the world there. And the reporter describes the parade that was done from the house of the Rosh Yeshiva to the new yeshiva building. It says people entered, and the gaboyim, the financial directors of the campaign, went to the bima. And people came up to the bima then. There was a big stock a box, and people put in their donations in front of all these Gedolei Hador. And the Gaboyim blessed everyone. And the men came. And then the reporter says, what I saw next were women were coming. And the women were coming with their small amount of coins that they collected. When they heard that this campaign would exist, they did their utmost to save what they could, and they were now putting it in to the Pushka to give to eternity. And he said the Gaboyim smiled and gave them the greatest of bracha. And then he describes how there was an elderly woman there who couldn't walk very well, right? And she was shaking. She had a trembling hand. And she stretched out her hand with difficulty. And she gave the money to the gabbai, who put it in the pushka for him. He said, I watched. There were tears rolling down her shriveled streak. She was not giving her few pennies. She was giving her very neshama, her soul, towards the building of a yeshiva building that was going to inspire and promulgate Torah to all. The reporter writes, he saw the joy and emotion that radiated from her face at having the privilege to give money to this Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh event. And he said, everybody was taken by this. This was probably the emotional highlight at that moment. The Baruch Chaim is telling us, the donation of the goat hairs with self-sacrifice, bringing them together and then maybe weaving them, because it says the women did it b'chachma, with wisdom, right? These were the most significant gifts, and they dwarfed the highly precious materials also given.